For many years now, blind and partially sighted people have been telling organisations like RNIB about the difficulties they have casting votes in elections in privacy and in secrecy. The right to do so is laid down in law, but it would seem our system does not allow people with visual impairments to do this completely. A recent court case has shed new light on the debate and reinvigorated arguments for change. To tell us more about the campaign asking for improvements to the current system, I'm joined by Samantha Fothergill from RNIB. Samantha, over the years, RNIB, along with many other charities, have been involved in campaigning to make the voting system more accessible. But you know, this has been going on for quite a long time now, hasn't it?
It certainly has. We originally campaigned to get the Representation of Peoples Act amended to include sort of special provision for blind and partially sighted people. And more recently, we've obviously done all the turned out reports, which has been monitoring what actually happened at the more recent elections. So 2015, 2016, 2017.
What are the most common complaints then that you've heard about when it comes to casting votes in privacy and in secrecy?
Often they'll encounter difficulties with the polling card, which isn't accessible, so they don't know where it is that they're actually supposed to vote. And obviously the postal voting process isn't accessible either. And then when people actually get to the polling station, we have reports of the large print ballot papers being displayed on the wall so that people can't take them into the booths with them, of the tactile voting device not being available, and polling staff not really knowing what they should do when confronted with a blind voter.
There are groups, though, which include RNIB, which have been advising and asking for change. Why is it such a slow process? Why do you think it's so difficult to make that experience more accessible?
Part of the problem, and this is why Rachel's case has been so important, is that having changes to the voting device actually required changes to the regulations. So it required parliamentary time in order to make the changes. And so that would necessitate the government having to find time in parliament, which is a tricky thing for them to do. But you know, in the meantime, we have done quite a lot of work with the Electoral Commission to make sure that polling staff understand what the obligations are and know what to do when presented with a blind voter. So things have improved. I think we've definitely seen an improvement, but the tactile voting device still remained problematic.
The system we use has been around for a very, very long time now, and many other countries have embraced, you know, telephone voting, electronic voting, all a lot more accessible. Is that something you would hope could be brought in here?
We definitely want to see a change. And, you know, when we were looking at the solution to sort of say what the government might do, we looked at what was happening in other countries. And I think there's definitely scope for telephone voting. Offline electronic voting seems to be a good way to go. And it might be that there's, you know, changes that can actually be made to the tactile voting device to improve the situation.
Because of the ongoing difficulties casting a vote in privacy and in secrecy, Rachel Andrews felt she had no option but to appeal to the High Court to force the government to make changes. Rachel, what were the difficulties that you faced?
The difficulties that I faced with the tactile voting device, as you say, were to do with secrecy and independence. So I felt that there was no way to have an independent or secret vote, because with the tactile voting device, one is required to remember the order of the candidates, which can be difficult if you've got, say, 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or even more in certain cases. And I always felt that I was never confident enough to remember them. We shouldn't be expected to have to remember them. And I usually have to have somebody read it out to me, a member of family or, this day, for example, a presiding officer. My vote was never going to be private, and I feel that that's a very important right as in a democratic society, to have a private vote just the same as somebody who's sighted would have.
You chose to go down the legal route then. Did you feel that you had no option?
Basically, the government kicked it into the long grass. They've been saying that they were going to do something for many years, and nothing just got done. The RNIB had reported for many years that we were having problems. social media reported that many years that we had problems. Their government knew we had problems, but nothing was getting done about it. And I felt that legal action as regards to a judicial review was the only way to do it.
How did you go about doing that?
I had worked with Lee Day before on another case around voting, which was to do with my local council. And I discussed it with my solicitor and we decided that, yes, we would go for it. And they were very, very helpful and guided me through the case at all times.
So how did it all work? How did you end up in court? What sort of took place?
Judicial review is quite a complicated process. You have to have permission to go to judicial review. You then have to lodge your papers. There's lots of backs and forths that often is quite complicated. But fortunately, my solicitors at Lee Day dealt with all that. The barrister who was representing me in the case was in court on March the 6th, where he basically said to the judge, the government are acting unlawfully in this situation and we would like it to change. And the government's lawyer came and said, we're not acting unlawfully. The definition to vote is very narrow by our standards. We argued that it wasn't. And the judge then went away and made his decision and fortunately ruled in our favour.
That was the ruling you had been hoping for. Was it one you were expecting?
It was difficult to say, really, to be honest. It was certainly, as you say, what we were hoping for, but we thought we had a good case, and the government's argument was that merely by law, the definition of the word to vote only pertained to physically marking a cross on the paper, which you can do with a tactile voting template. But we argued plainly, you have to know who you're voting for. You must know. Their definition was different, shall we say. They said basically it just means to mark a cross. So we had the common sense argument, I think, as well as the sort of moral argument there.
So this was a judicial review. The judge agreed with you. What does that mean?
Well, that means now that the government, assuming that they don't appeal, because of course they can, that they now must go away and must make changes. They must come up with something better than the TVD or an addition to the TVD that would make it that myself and my husband and all my friends and everybody else who are visually impaired, partially sighted or blind in this country can now vote independently and in secret.
As you said, this has been discussed for years now. There's been working groups, there's been submissions. Are you hopeful that a judge's ruling will make a difference? You know, appeals aside, if they decide to go down this route?
I hope so. At the end of the day, it's a legal judgment. And now I believe that not only morally do the government have to take notice of it, but it's a legal judgment. At the end of the day, it's a legal judgment they now must take notice.
Do you think there's more that could be done as well? I mean, we take into account people will receive, say, a polling card through the door, telling them about their vote and where to go, getting there, finding the polling booth, all that kind of thing. It's not really just about putting your mark in a box. There's a whole thing you have to go through to actually do that in the first place. Is that still something you think needs to be worked on as well?
I think so, yes. As I mentioned earlier, I had some issues with my own local council back in 2015. And one of the things that came out of that we discussed that the polling card is not accessible. It could be anything. It could be a flyer for a pizza menu, for all we know, when it comes through the door. So there certainly needs to be work there, making that more accessible, having it in a format of your choosing, whether that means Braille or audio tape or email, or it needs to be looked at across the board, really. For example, a postal vote, which is something that lots of people choose, completely inaccessible in the same way. So there certainly needs to be a lot looked at there, not just the TVD, but a whole thing that goes around it, as you say. I mean, there are other ways. There is also, for example, a successful telephone voting system in New Zealand. There are ways in Malta, for example, where they use a device not unlike the PenFriend, where you will scan it and it's, you know, they basically have stickers on a TVD and you scan and then can make your mark immediately at the polling station. So I think there are certainly technological advances in this day and age that would make it much easier and that wouldn't cost a huge amount of money, because obviously that's always an argument for the government. They don't want to spend any money.
Also joining us, we have Ailsa Irvine from the Electoral Commission. Perhaps you could tell us, first of all, what is the Electoral Commission? What influences, if any, do you have over the way that we cast our votes?
So the Electoral Commission is an independent organisation, independent of government, but reports into Parliament. We have a number of responsibilities in relation to elections. One of the things that we do is we provide guidance to returning officers at local councils who run elections and provide them with information to help them to run the poll so that people can cast their vote on polling day. We also provide guidance to political parties and campaigners and candidates so that they know what they need to do in order to comply with the rules on spending and donations and campaigning at elections.
So when it comes to looking at accessibility, what kind of input does the Electoral Commission have? Are you able to make suggestions? Are you able to implement these? Or does that have to be done through central government?
It's a bit of a combination of both. We can and we do review the election process after each election. We're always glad to hear feedback from people about their experiences voting. We use that to feed into our post-election reporting, and in that we tend to make recommendations for government pushing for reforms to electoral law. So one of the things that we have been looking at is the experience of people with sight loss and disabilities at polling stations, and we've made a number of recommendations to the government on what can be done to make voting more accessible for everyone. We also, within the current legal framework, can do a bit through the guidance we provide to local authorities on running elections, try to make improvements to that on an ongoing basis to make sure that the service provided to voters at polling stations continues to improve year on year.
Now, Rachel, as we heard, had the judicial review, which she won. This was around the tactile voting device. Have there been issues using this? Have you heard from people about problems they have had?
I think feedback on the device has certainly been mixed. There are some people who don't find it particularly helpful, and there are those who have given positive feedback and say that it does help them with the voting process. For now, there's still a requirement for it to be provided in every polling station, and we want to make sure that every local authority does do that and that the staff at the polling station know how to use it and can help anyone that does want to use it to use it. But it's certainly an imperfect position, and we're welcoming the High Court's recognition that electoral law does need to improve, make further improvements in this area.
In terms of that ruling then, does that allow you as the Electoral Commission to look at different ways and to advise of different ways? Because as we heard, it's the government's decision at the end of the day, and that kind of requires a legal change, a legislative change.
Yes, it would require a legislative change for anything to be different. For now, despite the ruling, there's still the requirement for the devices to be provided in the polling stations. But we're very keen to continue to look at it with the RNIB, with other organisations, with local authorities, to try to identify what opportunities there could be to modernise the system and to reflect these in the recommendations that we make to government.
So are there ways then that the Electoral Commission feels could make the system more accessible? I mean, Rachel's talked about telephone systems which are used abroad. There's scanners, you can swipe pens over. There's electronic voting in the US. Well, we seem to be a little bit behind in the UK.
I think there's certainly lessons that can be learned from other democracies across the world. I think it is time that our electoral law and our electoral framework is modernised, and we do look at being open to see what other mechanisms could be introduced into our system. But I think these things aren't going to happen overnight. There's a lot of considerations to feed into the process to make sure that whatever solutions we come up with are not only make sure that voting is accessible for everyone, but also that voting is secure and that people can have confidence in the results that it produces.
We also approached the Cabinet Office to speak with the Minister for Constitution regarding the High Court ruling. The Minister was not able to attend an interview, but they did submit this statement.
It is absolutely right that provisions should be in place to ensure that everyone who is eligible to vote can do so with confidence. The tactile voting device, TVD, has been in use since 2001 and has assisted many people with visual impairments to complete their ballot papers. However, government understands that the TVD works well for some, but not all. We are working with the Accessibility to Elections Working Group to find a further option for voters with sight loss. The court has not quashed the legal provisions prescribing the TVD, though, so returning officers will still provide the TVD to assist voters in the future, whilst further options are considered. Government is already working with the Royal National Institute of Blind People to identify improved ways of supporting people with sight loss to vote independently, including promoting improved training for polling station staff. At present, e-voting by any means is not regarded as sufficiently rigorous and may be vulnerable to attack or fraud. It would not be appropriate to introduce such a system unless it could be proven to be significantly robust and not vulnerable to attack or fraud. Last year, the government launched a far-reaching call for evidence asking people with disabilities, organisations that support them, and those involved in the delivery of elections to share their experiences of voting and suggestions for making the electoral system more accessible. The consultation received 256 responses from organisations and voters living with a broad range of disabilities, including mental illnesses, sight loss, learning disabilities, and those who require wheelchairs. Government's response was published on the gov.uk website, where we have committed to looking at further options to support disabled people to vote.
And we will, of course, keep you up to date on the progress of any changes to the current voting system for blind and partially sighted people here on RNIB Connect Radio.